Henderson. Welcome back, Mr. Henderson.
May it again please the court. Peter Henderson on behalf of Jeffrey Matheson. Mr. Matheson's case involves analysis of what effect do Rule 11 errors have on a defendant's plea. I think that the first question in this case is whether there was an error. The government hasn't conceded that there was an error, and I think that there is an error here, very, very plainly. In the Rule 11 colloquy, Mr. Matheson was advised that if the district court accepted its plea, he faced penalties, including a maximum mandatory minimum of 15 years to 40 years in prison. And I think the government would concede that that was incorrect, and obviously the sentencing below confirms that that was incorrect. So I think that's the first question, was there an error? And I think there plainly was. Now, the second question is that plain error? And that gets us into a discussion of, within Rule 11, what's the core concern? And I think the core concern, as this Court has said in cases like Pineda-Buenaventura, that the core concern is ensuring that a plea is knowing and voluntary. And in that case, of course, it was about the nature of the charge. In this case, it's about knowing what the maximum and minimum penalties are. As Mr. Matheson noted in his 51B response, if he had known that, you know, he's only looking at 5 to 20, maybe he goes to trial. And this happens routinely when it comes to federal sentencing and the decision whether to plead or whether to go to trial. There is, you know, within the guidelines and just kind of common sense, there tends to be a trial penalty. The maximum liability plays into the calculus in terms of whether that risk is worth it. So under plain error review, the question is whether this misadvisement affected the defendant's substantial rights. And I think it did. It induced a plea because Mr. Matheson thought, you know, I've been over this with my attorney. I'm expecting something like, 13, 14 years. If I could face up to 40, you know, I need to plead guilty. I need to not play with fire. The substantial rights here is that decision. And
that might be a plausible argument if this was a cold plea without a written plea agreement. There was a written plea agreement here, and it contained the correct mandatory minimum and maximum.
Right. And the problem is that in open court, I think that there is some significance to the formality of the Rule 11 colloquy.
Well, right, there is, but it has to be taken in the context of the whole proceeding, which includes what happened before, which in this case included a written plea agreement
right.
that the defendant was aware of, had read to him, had a copy of it had the correct mandatory minimum or statutory minimum and maximum penalty. So the argument that he was induced to plead guilty during the course of the Rule 11 colloquy is just implausible to me on these facts. You know, that might be the case where everything is happening in open court. There's nothing in writing beforehand.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if pleas were taken in federal court the way they're taken in state court, for example,
right.
That might be a plausible argument. But there's so much care and attention taken to these things in federal court and so much that happens in advance of one of these hearings that we have to consider it in that context.
Right, and I think that our position would be we do put a lot of care into these things in federal court. And one of those things is making sure that the Rule 11 colloquy is complete.
Right, so we've got a technical error here. The judge misstated the penalty, stated an enhanced statutory minimum and maximum penalty that was inapplicable, but whether that affected his substantial rights depends upon whether it did have that sort of inducement effect on him to plead guilty, and it seems highly unlikely in this case,
right.
Particularly given the strength of the case as well.
Sure. Well, sure. And the calculus for going to trial or pleading guilty certainly involves the strength of the case.
And it is a very, very strong case. So if he gets the relief he's seeking, he goes back, he goes to trial, loses the acceptance responsibility reduction, and he's in a much worse position than he is after this sentence.
And I think that may be correct, but I think that he feels certainly that he would like that opportunity to go back to square one.
The pre-sentence report had the accurate range that he faced, didn't it?
Yes, it did. There were no objections.
No objection to that.
Right, and our office has reviewed it, and we found nothing wrong with the pre-sentence report. The only issue is the plea. But again, it's really the question is what's the effect of a Rule 11 error as to the maximum penalty. The concern that I have is the concern that the court did enunciate in Pineda, and that's that we have defendants coming into the federal system, and for those of us in the system, these statutory maximum minimums, the guidelines, those are all second nature. But when we have defendants coming in, they can be very confused by, you know, the court's telling me this, my attorney's telling me this, what's going on? And I think that's why that Rule 11 colloquy in open court is so important. Signing a piece of paper and saying, yeah, I've reviewed it, and my attorney's assured me this, is one thing. But having a federal judge tell you that you're looking at 15 to 40 years, I think, is quite another. Again, we do think that this is a plain error in that it does affect his rights, and it affects really the most important right that I think a criminal defendant in our system can give up, and that's the right to trial. And being misadvised as to the potential penalties, the potential risks one takes in giving up that right, I think is a serious error. I think it is plain, and I think it affected Mr. Matheson's rights. So if there are no further questions, I'll reserve the rest of my time.
Thank you, Mr. Henderson. Mr. Graber?
May it please the Court. Good morning, Your Honor. My name is Dan Graber. I represent the United States. I handled the case down below, and I'm the one that screwed up when Judge Conley asked at the plea hearing, does the enhanced penalty exist? And I said, yeah, I think so, and I was wrong. I was confusing him with another defendant that I was prosecuting. But there isn't plain error in this case. As you mentioned, Judge Sykes, there's a written plea agreement that laid out the 5 to 20 and an enhanced 15 to 40 if he had a prior. Jeff Matheson knew he didn't have any priors, so he knew he wasn't looking at 15 to 40.
The pre-sentence report had not been prepared as of the time of the plea.
Had not, correct. So we had PSR hadn't been written yet. When the PSR does get written, they don't file an objection. At the sentencing, when Judge Conley asks him, do you have anything to say? He says, yeah, I'm guilty. I should go to jail. He never says anything about I'm operating under a misconception about what the penalties are. At the plea...
Defendants don't talk like that.
at the plea hearing, Judge Conley asked him, did you go over this with your attorney? Yes. Did you go over the plea agreement? Yes. Did you go over the maximum penalties with your attorney? He said, yes. You have any reason to believe that you're going to receive any particular sentence today? Nope. Any reason to believe that I'm going to impose a particular sentence with you today? No. They can't prove that it affected his substantial rights. This argument they're making I think the statement he makes in his Anders response is, well, you know, a 13-year sentence is pretty good when you're looking at 15 to 40, but it's not pretty good if you're looking at 5 to 20. But if you read that, Your Honors, he never says that, but for the error, I would go to trial. He never says that. In fact, on page 5 of that pleading, he says, I want to plead anew. That's the statement he makes. He never says, I want to go to trial. And you're right. The inference breaks down with regards to, well, wait a minute. The only reason you knew about a 13-year sentence is after you got sentenced on May 10. When you're sitting there at the plea hearing operating under this misconception on February 23rd, you didn't know what your sentence was going to be, and you told Judge Conley that. So to say that you thought you had a better deal on February 23rd, the timing breaks down because you didn't know what your sentence was going to be, so you can't do that analysis of saying, well, a 13-year sentence is good on a 5-20, but not on, or on a 15-40, but not on a 5-20. That's why he can't show substantial effect on his rights. And then the third prong, affecting the fairness and the integrity of the judicial proceeding. I threw in my brief the Martin case and the Driver case to talk about the fact that, you know, when you get notice from other sources like a plea agreement or a PSR, then you can't show plain error because you've got other places that told you, hey, this is what your penalty was going to be. And that's what we have in this case. He had other sources, including his attorney, the plea agreement, the PSR, and his actions during that entire time period show that he got what he bargained for. He was looking at 5-20. He got 13. He was looking at 15-40. Well, he got 13. That's under 15, so that would have been a windfall. So there's no prejudice to him in that regard. Unless the court has any other questions, I'll sit down.
Well, Mr. Graber, I appreciate your position and your describing the context, but your brief on page 11 says the district court did not misinform Matheson about the penalties, much less commit plain error, which requires reversal. Now, the second half of that phrase I have no problem with, but how can you comfortably represent that he wasn't misinformed? Now, are you speaking not to the actual words, but clearly he was delivered a message that was not appropriate for this setting, this plea setting.
What the court gave him was an absolute auto marker. This is what you could. These are the potential penalties that you could be facing. Now the court doesn't know whether he's got a prior. That none of that's going to be determined until the PSR. And he went through that. You understand? I can't come to a sentence. This is the potential that you're facing. You understand that, sir? Yes. You understand that I have to go through the guidelines, and which will go through your criminal history. You understand that I can't give you a sentence. I won't know that until that point. Yes, sir. So the court, that's the argument I'm making, is the court didn't misinform because the court's saying this is a potential sentence that may be conditioned.
The court had the obligation to state what it stated.
I'm saying that the argument I'm making is that he didn't. He could have done it better. What he should have done, you know, in these cases, Your Honor, and we've got, you know, the immigration cases, the CP cases, where you have these enhancements. So what do you do? Because the judge doesn't know at that point when he's sitting there.
It's especially hard on the judge when the advocate in front of him misleads him.
I screwed up. Yeah, you're right. I screwed up, and he took that and said, okay, this is where you're going to go with it. And then that's on me, and that's why I'm saying. But the outer marker is what he was giving on there. He was looking at a potential 40. The judge just didn't know until the PSR would have been written. And he went through that with the defendant and said, you know, this is.
Well, my only point is you were quite frank in acknowledging your misstep. But it seems to me he followed it. So that amounts. I'm not being critical of the district judge. Indeed, I'm not being critical of you for acknowledging the error that you felt you committed. But it just seems to me that the statement in the brief is
And that wasn't my intention to try to mislead you guys in the brief. What I was trying to do is show that this is the outer marker on that he did, and that's. It's almost like belt and suspenders if you think about it, because he doesn't know what's going to happen down the road. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Graber. Mr. Henderson?
Just briefly, as to that last point, I do still disagree with the government that this was just a range of potential penalties. The words are a maximum and mandatory minimum of 15 years in prison. That's not a, I don't know what the sentence would be. It could be anywhere from 5 to 40 or whatever the guidelines have. It's a mandatory minimum of 15 years. That's an error. So I think the record reflects that.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Henderson. Thank you, Mr. Graber. Mr. Henderson, we'll give you a break for a couple of cases and see you a little later.